Chapter 16. After he had made 3 days' march through their territories, he discovered from some prisoners that the river Sambre was not more than 10 miles from his camp, that all the Nervi had stationed themselves on the other side of that river, and together with the Atrebates and the Viramandui, their neighbors, were there awaiting the arrival of the Romans, for they had persuaded both these nations to try the same fortune of war as themselves, that the forces of the Aduatuci were also expected by them, and were on their march, that they had put their women, and those who through age appeared useless for war, in a place to which there was no approach for an army on account of the marshes. Chapter 17. Having learnt these things, he sends forward scouts and centurions to choose a convenient place for the camp. And as a great many of the surrounding Belgae and other Gauls, following Caesar, marched with him, some of these, as was afterwards learnt from the prisoners, having accurately observed during those days the army's method of marching, went by night to the Nervi, and informed them that a great number of baggage trains passed between the several legions, and that there would be no difficulty, when the first legion had come into the camp, and the other legions were at a great distance, to attack that legion while under baggage, which, being routed and the baggage train seized, it would come to pass that the other legions would not dare to stand their ground. It added weight also to the advice of those who reported that circumstance, that the Nervi, from early times, because they were weak in cavalry, for not even at this time do they attend to it, but accomplish by their infantry whatever they can, in order that they might the more easily obstruct the cavalry of their neighbors if they came down upon them for the purpose of plundering, having cut young trees and bent them by means of their numerous branches extending on to the sides, and the quick briars and thorns springing up between them, had made these hedges present a fortification like a wall, through which it was not only impossible to enter, but even to penetrate with the eye. Since therefore the march of our army would be obstructed by these things, the Nervi thought that the advance ought not to be neglected by them. Chapter 18. The nature of the ground which our men had chosen for the camp was this. A hill, declining evenly from the top, extended to the river Sambre, which we had mentioned above. From this river there arose a second hill of like ascent, on the other side and opposite to the former, and open from about 200 paces at the lowest part, but in the upper part woody, so much so that it was not easy to see through it into the interior. Within those woods the enemy kept themselves in concealment. A few troops of horse soldiers appeared on the open ground along the river. The depth of the river was about 3 feet. Chapter 19. Caesar, having sent his cavalry on before, followed close after them with all his forces, but the plan and order of the march was different from that which the Belgae had reported to the Nervi. For as he was approaching the enemy, Caesar, according to his custom, led on as the van 6 legions unencumbered by baggage. Behind them he had placed the baggage trains of the whole army. Then the 2 legions which had been last raised closest to the rear, and were a guard for the baggage train. Our horse, with the slingers and archers, having passed the river, commenced action with the cavalry of the enemy, while they from time to time betook themselves into the woods to their companions, and again made an assault out of the wood upon our men, who did not dare to follow them in their retreat further than the limit to which the plain and open parts extended. In the meantime, the 6 legions which had arrived first, having measured out the work, began to fortify the camp. When the first part of the baggage train of our army was seen by those who lay hidden in the woods, which had been agreed on among them as the time for commencing action, as soon as they had arranged their line of battle and formed their ranks within the woods, and had encouraged one another, they rushed out suddenly with all their forces and made an attack upon our horse. The latter being easily routed and thrown into confusion, the Nervi ran down to the river with such incredible speed that they seemed to be in the woods, the river, and close upon us almost at the same time. And with the same speed they hastened up the hill to our camp, and to those who were employed in the works. Chapter 20. Caesar had everything to do at one time. The standard to be displayed, which was the sign when it was necessary to run to arms, the signal to be given by the trumpet, the soldiers to be called off from the works, those who had proceeded some distance for the purpose of seeking materials for the rampart to be summoned, the order of battle to be formed, the soldiers to be encouraged, the watchword to be given. A great part of these arrangements was prevented by the shortness of time and the sudden approach and charge of the enemy. Under these difficulties, two things proved of advantage. First, the skill and experience of the soldiers, because, having been trained by former engagements, they could suggest to themselves what ought to be done, as conveniently as receive information from others. And secondly, that Kaiser had forbidden his several lieutenants to depart from the works and their respective legions before the camp was fortified. These, on account of the near approach and the speed of the enemy, did not then wait for any command from Kaiser, but of themselves executed whatever appeared proper. Chapter 21. Kaiser, having given the necessary orders, hastened to and fro into whatever quarter fortune carried him to animate the troops, and came to the 10th Legion. Having encouraged the soldiers with no further speech than that they should keep up the remembrance of their wonted valor, and not be confused in mind, but valiantly sustain the assault of the enemy, as the latter were not farther from them than the distance to which a dart could be cast, he gave the signal for commencing battle. And having gone to another quarter for the purpose of encouraging the soldiers, he finds them fighting. Such was the shortness of the time, and so determined was the mind of the enemy on fighting, that time was wanting not only for affixing the military insignia, but even for putting on the helmets and drawing off the covers from the shields. To whatever part any one by chance came from the works in which he had been employed, and whatever standards he saw first, at these he stood, lest in seeking his own company he should lose the time for fighting. Chapter 22. The army having been marshaled, rather as the nature of the ground and the declivity of the hill and the exigency of the time, than as the method and order of military matters required, whilst the legions in the different places were withstanding the enemy, some in one quarter, some in another, and the view was obstructed by the very thick hedges intervening, as we have before remarked, neither could proper reserves be posted, nor could the necessary measures be taken in each part, nor could all the commands be issued by one person. Therefore, in such an unfavorable state of affairs, various events of fortune followed. Chapter 23. The soldiers of the 9th and 10th Legions, as they had been stationed on the left part of the army casting their weapons, speedily drove the Atrebates, for that division had been opposed to them, who were breathless with running and fatigue and worn out with wounds, from the higher ground into the river, and following them as they were endeavoring to pass it, slew with their swords a great part of them while impeded therein. They themselves did not hesitate to pass the river, and having advanced to a disadvantageous place when the battle was renewed, they nevertheless again put to flight the enemy who had returned and were opposing them. In like manner, in another quarter, two different legions, the 11th and the 8th, having routed the Viramandui, with whom they had engaged, were fighting from the higher ground upon the very banks of the river. But almost the entire camp on the front and on the left side being then exposed, since the 12th Legion was posted on the right wing, and the 7th at no great distance from it, all the Nervi, in a very close body, with Boduognatus, who held the chief command, as their leader, hastened toward that place, and part of them began to surround the legions on their unprotected flank, part to make for the highest point of the encampment. Chapter 24. At the same time, our horsemen and light-armed infantry, who had been with those who, as I have related, were routed by the first assault of the enemy, as they were betaking themselves into the camp, met the enemy face to face, and again some sought flight into another quarter. And the camp followers, who from the Decuman gate and from the highest ridge of the hill had seen our men pass the river as victors, when, after going out for the purposes of plundering, they looked back and saw the enemy parading in our camp, committed themselves precipitately to flight. At the same time there arose the cry and shout of those who came with the baggage train, and they, affrighted, were carried out some way, some another. By all these circumstances the cavalry of the Treveri were much alarmed, whose reputation for courage is extraordinary among the Gauls, and who had come to Kaiser, being sent by their state as auxiliaries. And when they saw our camp, filled with a large number of the enemy, the legions hard-pressed and almost held surrounded, the camp retainers, horsemen, slingers, and Numidians fleeing on all sides divided and scattered, they, despairing of our affairs, hastened home, and related to their state that the Romans were routed and conquered, and that the enemy were in possession of their camp and baggage train. Chapter 25. Caesar proceeded after encouraging the 10th Legion to the right wing, where he perceived that his men were hard-pressed, and that in consequence of the standards of the 12th Legion being collected together in one place, the crowded soldiers were a hindrance to themselves in the fight, that all the centurions of the 4th cohort were slain, and the standard-bearer killed, the standard itself lost, almost all the centurions of the other cohorts either wounded or slain, and among them the chief centurion of the Legion, P. Sextius Baculus, a very valiant man, who was so exhausted by many and severe wounds that he was already unable to support himself, he likewise perceived that the rest were slackening their efforts, and that some, deserted by those in the rear, were retiring from the battle and avoiding the weapons, that the enemy, on the other hand, though advancing from the lower ground, were not relaxing in front, and were at the same time pressing hard on both flanks. He also perceived that the affair was at a crisis, and that there was not any reserve which could be brought up. Having therefore snatched a shield from one of the soldiers in the rear, for he himself had come without a shield, he advanced to the front of the line, and addressing the centurions by name, and encouraging the rest of the soldiers, he ordered them to carry forward the standards, and extend the companies, that they might the more easily use their swords. On his arrival, as hope was brought to the soldiers and their courage restored, whilst every one for his own part in the sight of his general desired to exert his utmost energy, the impetuosity of the enemy was a little checked. Chapter 26. Caesar, when he perceived that the 7th Legion, which stood close by him, was also hard-pressed by the enemy, directed the tribunes of the soldiers to effect a junction of the legions gradually, and make their charge upon the enemy with a double front, which, having been done, since they brought assistance the one to the other, nor feared lest their rear should be surrounded by the enemy, they began to stand their ground more boldly, and to fight more courageously. In the meantime, the soldiers of the 2 legions which had been the rear of the army, as a guard for the baggage train, upon the battle being reported to them, quickened their pace, and were seen by the enemy on the top of the hill. And Titus Labienus, having gained possession of the camp from the enemy, and observed from the higher ground what was going on in our camp, sent the 10th Legion as a relief to our men, who, when they had learnt from the flight of the horse and the sutlers in what position the affair was, and in how great danger the camp and the legion and the commander were involved, left undone nothing which tended to dispatch. Chapter 27. By their arrival, so great a change of matters was made, that our men, even those who had fallen down exhausted with wounds, leant on their shields and renewed the fight. Then the camp retainers, though unarmed, seeing the enemy completely dismayed, attacked them, though armed. The horsemen, too, that they might by their valor blot out the disgrace of their flight, thrust themselves before the legionary soldiers in all parts of the battle. But the enemy, even in the last hope of safety, displayed such great courage that when the foremost of them had fallen, the next stood upon them prostrate and fought from their bodies. When these were overthrown and their corpses heaped up together, those who survived cast their weapons against our men thence, as from a mound, and returned our darts which had fallen between the armies, so that it ought not to be concluded that men of such great courage had injudiciously dared to pass such a broad river, ascend very high banks, and come up to a very disadvantageous place, since their greatness of spirit had rendered these actions easy, although in themselves very difficult. Chapter 28. This battle being ended, and the nation and name of the Nervii being almost reduced to annihilation, their old men, whom, together with the boys and women we have stated to have been collected together in the fenny places and marshes, on this battle having been reported to them, since they were convinced that nothing was an obstacle to their conquerors, and nothing safe to the conquered, sent ambassadors to Caesar by the consent of all who remained, and surrendered themselves to him. And in recounting the calamity of their state, said that their senators were reduced from 600 to 3, that from 60,000 men they were reduced to scarcely 500 who could bear arms, whom Caesar, that he might appear to use compassion towards the wretched and the suppliant, most carefully spared, and ordered them to enjoy their own territories and towns,
and commanded their neighbors that they should restrain themselves and their dependents from offering injury or outrage to them. Chapter 29. When the Aduatuki, of whom we have written above, were coming with all their forces to the assistance of the Nervi, upon this battle being reported to them, they returned home after they were on the march. Deserting all their towns and forts, they conveyed together all their possessions into one town, eminently fortified by nature. While this town had on all sides around it very high rocks and precipices, there was left on one side a gently ascending approach, of not more than 200 feet in width, which place they had fortified with a very lofty double wall. Besides, they had placed stones of great weight and sharpened stakes upon the walls. They were descended from the Cimbri and Teutones, who, when they were marching into our province in Italy, having deposited on this side the river Rhine such of their baggage trains as they could not drive or convey with them, left 6,000 of their men as a guard and defense for them. These, having after the destruction of their countrymen been harassed for many years by their neighbors, while one time they waged war offensively, and at another resisted it when waged against them, concluded a peace with the consent of all, and chose this place as their settlement. Chapter 30. And on the first arrival of our army they made frequent sallies from the town, and contended with our men in trifling skirmishes. Afterwards, when hemmed in by a rampart of 12 feet in height and 15 miles in circuit, they kept themselves within the town. When, Vinii having been brought up and a mound raised, they observed that a tower also was being built at a distance, they at first began to mock the Romans from their wall, and to taunt them with the following speeches. For what purpose was so vast a machine constructed at so great a distance? With what hands, or with what strength, did they, especially as they were men of such very little stature, for our shortness of stature, in comparison with the great size of their bodies, is generally a subject of much contempt to the men of Gaul, trust to place against their walls a tower of such great weight?